We have many illustrations and spheres of life where we could look at someone who became successful and then failed. Think of the gaming industry and the lottery. How many times have we seen someone wins the lottery and life goes to shambles from what we hear about? Now, maybe not always, but regularly, life can go just to shambles. Things can be falling apart relationally, in terms of how they go about their normal patterns of life. They have all this success, they're ruined. Think of sports. Have you heard of the Heisman Curse? The Heisman Trophy is presented to the college football player who is the best player each year, and it's traditionally the case that that Heisman player is playing in a bowl game, sometimes a championship bowl game. They get there and they fail. That's the Heisman Curse. Or they get drafted, the first draft pick gets a big contract, or it's a player. Choose your sport who gets a big contract, and shortly after that, they are not successful anymore. You who are Chiefs fans, you have seen this over and over, and this is one of the reasons why Patrick Mahomes is exceptional, because he got a big contract and he's just as good as he was before. We've seen it in the past where the player gets the big contract and shortly afterward, they're either injured or we wish they were injured. Not because we want physical harm on someone, we just don't want them on the field anymore. But the organization's on the hook for millions of dollars, so what are they in a catch-22? It doesn't matter the sport. Ace pitcher gets a big contract. Failure. Not always, but we've seen this over and over. A person climbs the ladder of success in business, and we know them. And soon, we don't know them as well anymore. The person we once knew, they're not that same person. Not just because they're busy or extra demands or responsibilities, their character has changed. Now that they have X title, they make X decisions, they have X resources, they seem to be just out for themselves. And the church doesn't do very well with this, do we? And when I say this, I mean how we handle success. Many churches are helpful for folks when life's tough, when we feel like a failure. And we do. We understand we feel like a failure at times, sure. When life's tough, we got problem after problem, difficulty, layoff. I can think of no better organization to be a part of when life's tough than the local church, because people are here to help you. We're here to pray for you. We are going to labor beside you. We are going to resource you. We're going to help you. Life's given you some tough circumstances. But many churches, and I think broadly evangelicalism today, even analyzed through the window of music and lyrics that we sing, it's as if God only exists if life is crumbling. I only really have a relationship with God if my life's falling apart, which the Lord allows circumstances into our lives. Sometimes they're self-inflicted, sometimes not. And the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. He's near in those times. And that's true. But we've done a disservice. And I think, parents, we've done a disservice to our children if we don't teach them that their circumstances do not affect God's character. God isn't somehow compassionate when I'm suffering and distant when I'm doing pretty well. there's a great danger because some of our children are going to have life go okay for them. And some of you, life sometimes goes okay. There may be seasons, consecutive seasons, where life's pretty good. Family's doing okay. Making money. Pretty healthy. Successful. Where's God then? That's what I want to address with you today. Parents want us to help equip our children that God is constant. He's to be worshipped. He's to be recognized when you get into the college you want, not just when you get the rejection letter. He's worth your attention when you get the raise, not just when the boss overlooks you again. Kids, God is the same. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is the center of life when you begin to be in a relationship with some guy or girl you really like. God is the same there as when they overlook you. Or they say, don't call me anymore. God is the same. God is to be worshipped when you get the car of your dreams. When you've saved up and here it is. God is to be worshipped. God is to be thanked. Your grid of life is to be around Him, even in those blessings. Not just when it's another month and you still can't make the payment. I want to think with you about prayer when we're successful. And I mean successful in a holistic sense. I mean when, by God's grace, things are going well. I've tried to work, I've tried to be faithful, and this is how the situation is turning out, when the relationship is the way I want it to be. It's my hope being fulfilled. When I've got the raise, when I've got the job, when I've got the degree, and I've been praying along the way, and I can see my success is from God, how should I pray then? That's what I want to think about today. Because we don't have to look outside the Bible for illustrations, do we? Right here in the history of Israel, the first two kings illustrate the point we're making today. King Saul, foot taller than others, strong, great warrior, the man the people wanted, the man that the Lord raised up. But when he became successful, he stopped listening to God. He failed. And the Lord told him through the prophet Samuel, I'm taking the kingdom from you and I'm giving it to someone whose heart is fully mine. And David's heart was throughout his life. But David also, when he became successful, what happened? David likewise failed. David's failure with Bathsheba was not right after fighting Goliath. David's failure with Bathsheba was not in 2 Samuel 5 when he finally ruled over Judah and Israel. 2 Samuel 11. After David's exploits, after David is unconquerable. 2 Samuel 8 through 10 is a litany of David's military success. It's victory after victory after victory. And those victories are punctuated with instances of David seeking God. David stopping, should I do this, Lord? And waiting on the Lord's reply. In 2 Samuel 11, when David is relaxed and successful, all the promises of the Bible are coming to bear in his success. From Abraham forward to David, I'm going to have a people, take them into that land. They are going to live according to me and display my greatness. They've asked for a king. I'll give them a king. And David is that man. And all of that success in the initial verses of 2 Samuel 11. And David on his rooftop sees Bathsheba. And he did not pray in his success. I've heard it said over and over, and I've seen it in illustration after illustration. It's easy, so to speak, to seek God when life's tough. That is a gauge of our spirituality. Another gauge is, what do we do in our relationship with God when life is good? When we're successful? If you really want to know your heart or someone else's, see how they respond to life circumstances and to God when they get that raise, when they get that degree, when they get that guy, when they get that girl, when they get that promotion, when they get that money, when they get that vehicle, when they get that neighborhood, when they get what they want, how do they respond? This may be you. In the midst of a pandemic, life may be tough. It's tough for all of us. All these things going on, complications of life. But for some of us, we look at life's still pretty good. Kind of making it. And there are going to be seasons of life in the years to come where things are pretty good here. Kids, you're going to get into the school you want to. The success of kids in MCC, can I get a witness of what's to come in the future? The intellectual abilities, the creativity. Kids, you're going to get into schools you want to get into. You're going to be able to make money if you continue on in society. There's a lot of good ahead for you. And God is worth your attention when you get into that school, when you score the winning touchdown, when you make the winning basket. God is worth your attention. And if you don't honor him there, listen carefully, you're going to experience a measure of his displeasure. God will have no rivals. And we'll see today that this is how God operates. Even in the new covenant, we go on with our lives not honoring God, not honoring him in success. There's going to be discipline to come. Michael Wilcock writes, "The principle of spiritual cause and effect remains true as a basic fact. The New Testament simply clarifies the principle. The Christian, like his Old Testament counterpart, finds that both obedience and disobedience have inevitable effects. The unconverted person, for his part, will be punished for the basic sin of rejecting Jesus Christ and blessed when he obeys the gospel." If you're a guest with us, we are walking through 1st and 2nd Chronicles. These books of the Old Testament are written very late in the history of God's people, and they recapture, by way of historical presentation, the glory days of Israel and what followed in the nation of Judah. We have been walking through these books the last couple of years, and this is how we work as a church. Again, if you're a guest with us, it's always good to know what's going on in a church, or you're newer to MCC. We preach through books of the Bible generally to get a perspective of that book. You know where we're at, you know where we're going, and we want to think about the Bible, Genesis to Revelation, and how any particular passage fits in that grid of flowing left to right in the Bible. And as we'll see today, we even think the maps are important. Some of you teach in our church in small groups, Sunday school classes. Some of you are training to be teachers, and I just cannot emphasize enough the importance of a Bible atlas, or when you see passages and they give a geographic reference to try to look that up. So many resources online that you can get, but a good Bible atlas can be very helpful for you, and we'll see that even today, because the author assumed such knowledge of these places that we don't have so much, and so we want to make sure we understand that. They communicate theology through the historical situation, and we'll gather that up today. So we've been walking through First and now into 2 Chronicles. And we're in now this latter part of 2 Chronicles. And over, these kings that the author is writing about, they're not learning from their predecessor, from their parents. They are often replaying the same sins that the previous king walked in his ways. And we've begun to see this decline, and we'll see it through the rest of 2 Chronicles. The author is writing particularly to whom we're calling the comeback kids. The author is writing to those who went into exile and came back, or those who were still in the land. The Lord disciplined his people, and sending them to Assyria and then to Babylon because of their sin, because of their failure in his faithfulness to his word. And he's kind to allow them to come back. And the chronicler writes, this is our theme. He's arguing that the audience needs to be faithful in the covenant. They need to remember God's word. They need to remember the structures of their religion, the temple, the work of the priests. And all of these will surface up with Uzziah today. As a king, Uzziah provides us an opportunity to think about prayer in success. Because of all the kings we've looked at just recently, Jehoshaphat, Amaziah, Joash, Ahaziah, they had some ups and downs of success and failure. But here the chronicler in 2 Chronicles 26:16, about between verses 15 and 16, about halfway through the chapter, he just comes right out and says it. And JC, a few weeks ago when he was preaching, mentioned the chronicler. He would not be someone who you'd want to have organize a surprise birthday party. He just can't get over foreshadowing. You know what's to come. Well, here it's even worse. I mean, he just goes out and just expressly says it. When Uzziah was successful, his heart grew proud. And this is the result. What I want to do is I want to think about Uzziah and success in prayer. I want to walk through here the Lord's grace on Uzziah. And about halfway through here at verses 15 and 16, we're going to stop. And I want to set out 7 prayer requests that you can pray when you're successful. Then we'll finish out the chapter and have a bit more conclusion at the end and reflect on Uzziah's demise. But halfway through, you want to leave some space for notes. I want to set out 7 ideas for you there. How should you pray when you're successful? Well, the Lord strengthens those who seek him. This is a principle we've seen over and over, and it's true today. But if we grow proud in our position, the Lord will maintain his justice by disciplining us. And again, this is consistent with the New Covenant. I could take this outline and apply it to multiple chapters in 1 and 2 Corinthians. I could do that exactly and be very faithful to the text. These principles are true. The fulcrum is going to be different, and we'll talk about that at the end, but these principles are true for our lives, and Uzziah provides us an opportunity to think about it. Join me then, chapter 26 and verse 1. All the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in the place of his father Amaziah. Amaziah was written about in chapter 25, and there we saw that Amaziah started well. He wins the Heisman Trophy. He listens to the word of the Lord a couple of times, but fails. And we'll see that same pattern here. Just as Joash, during the days of Jehoiada, listened, failed. Jehoshaphat as well, hearing the word of the Lord is faithful. They don't hear the word of the Lord, they fail. I want to jump down to just verse 3 for a moment. We're going to come back to verse 2, but he's reigning here. And Uzziah was 16 years old when he became king. He reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. That's quite a long reign relatively in these kings. And that's showing of the Lord's favor. He's allowing him to reign for a longer time. His mother's name was Jechaliah. She's from Jerusalem. Now we have our overview of Uzziah. He did what was right in the Lord's sight, as his father Amaziah had done. I pointed this out last week, which is, again, another benefit. If you're a guest with us, I'd encourage you, if you're looking for a local church, find a local church where they preach through passage, preach through books. You can understand. Last week we noted, even though Amaziah in chapter 25 fails miserably, ignores the word of the Lord to his own demise, the chronicler's perspective was yet that in part he did what was right. And the chronicler, very optimistic, here Uzziah did what was right, and we could understand this holistically. He did what was right on the first lap of a two-lap race. His first lap looked good, and the chronicler is going to deal with that and set that out. He started well. He did what was right. And now let me explain, verse 5. He sought God throughout the lifetime of Zechariah, the teacher of the fear of God. Just as Amaziah before him listened to the prophet early and was successful. Joash listened to Jehoiada, the priest, and was successful. Do you get the point that the chronicler is trying to make? If you will heed God's word, if you will listen to the prophets, the priests, if you'll follow the structures, there's success ahead. That's the pattern to walk in. And again, we have this fork in the road of the Old Testament. Psalm 1, blessed is the man who fears the Lord, walks in his ways. He will be fruitful, he'll be prosperous, not so the wicked. They are like the chaff that the wind blows away. The wicked will not survive the judgment nor sit in the congregation of the righteous. But the Lord watches over the way of the righteous. It's two paths. Seek the Lord. That's the chronicler's point. Verse 5. He sought God throughout the lifetime of Zechariah, the teacher of the fear of God. Not just programmatic, do this, don't do that. That's somewhat true. But it's fear God. Recognize this being who has called you to himself, who has been gracious to you to bring you back to this land, and order life around him when you're successful, not just when you're in the bottom of a well and you need help. But when you're going to draw water because your flocks are increasing, go seek God then. Fear him when you're successful. And God will give success. This is the principle of verse 5. So this is the pattern of life here. Now, we stopped at verse 2, and I'll come back to that now. The chronicler, again, like many Old Testament historical writers, sets out geographical ideas, and those are theological if we know the geography of the day. In verse 2, he rebuilt Eloth and restored it to Judah after Amaziah rested with his fathers. This is sort of out of place for us in the flow. We could pull verse 2 out. It wouldn't be a problem. But verse 2, Eloth is in Egypt. This is a long, long, long way south for a king to go and rebuild an outpost, to rebuild an area that could certify as a military district for him and provide greater strength for the nation. We don't understand that today, but this is, again, to maybe use an illustration that would be modern for us. It would be like a leader in our day getting this legislation passed or establishing this military unit that would stabilize a particular goal or endeavor for us in a huge way. It would be like founding a new city almost and restoring it and bringing it back to life. It's hard to overstate the success that this provided. But it's not just here, this outpost far away, but nearby. Notice the text, we pick it up in verse 6. Uzziah went out to wage war against the Philistines. We've thought about David already today. The Philistines were David's main opponent. Goliath was a Philistine. The Philistines are a proximal enemy. They have the land just to the west of Judah toward the Mediterranean Sea there. And right along the Mediterranean Sea, the land of the Philistines is important because there's a major highway that goes from Egypt up north to Syria, north of Israel. This major highway is a trade route, and if a nation can own that area, they're going to be successful. He tore down the wall of Gath, the wall of Jebna, and the wall of Ashdod. Those cities are right along that trade route. Then he built cities in the vicinity of Ashdod and among the Philistines. These are military outposts, places where the people of Abraham can go and live. And God helped him against the Philistines. Verse 7. The Arabs that live in Gur Baal and the Munites, the Ammonites, gave Uzziah tribute money. His fame spread as far as the entrance of Egypt, for God made him very powerful. Verse 8 brings us back to verse 2. And what we need to recognize between verse 2 and verse 8, the chronicler has put in terms his audience would understand. It's a little foreign to us, but it would be like someone who wanted to take over Kansas or Missouri or these two states together in Kansas City, building an outpost in Little Rock, Arkansas. Okay, and just this is now going to be Chief's Kingdom. Okay, and then also Lawrence and Topeka, all the way up to Lincoln, Nebraska, and down maybe to Oklahoma City. So we're going to secure that area, and we're going to secure to the south. We're going to have outposts along at those places. You're going to be able to go and get your Chiefs gear and your Mahomes haircut, because those are ours. Do you see? This is great military expansion. One writer says, these verses summarize Uzziah's foreign policy. Uzziah's campaign against the Philistines not only represented an ongoing conflict of traditional enemies, no doubt Uzziah had the important strategic purpose of reasserting some control over this important international coastal highway that was there. If you've got access to the highway and some control over it, you can control travel, you can control trade, you have a say in local politics. It would be like the Chiefs having a say in what happens in Little Rock, Lawrence, Lincoln, Stillwater, or Oklahoma City. You have access there. This is his success. And what did the chronicler say in verse 7? God did this. Notice this. Verse 7, verse 5. God gave him success. God helped him. This was because of God. God made him very powerful. Look at the end of verse 8. It's triplet statement. Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem locally, the corner gate, the valley gate, the corner buttress. He fortified them. He had many cattle, both in the lowlands and the plain. He built towers in the desert and dug many wells. Look at the chronicler, just can't get over it. Again, I'm not down, I believe, inspiration, inerrancy, but I also want us to know how the chronicler's pen is flowing. Let's not, he's on a roll. Dirt, since he was a lover of the soil. He had farmers and vine dressers in the hills and the fertile lands. And these are not unrelated to military success, because if you have a large military, you have to feed those people. And the land is fertile. And I'm joking just a bit, but let's be serious about that land. If the land is fertile, and we're reading Deuteronomy, which the chronicler would want his audience to read, obedience leads to fertile soil. All of this complex coming together, military success to the far southeast, to the west, the land is fertile. In Jerusalem, rebuilding these gates and towers for strength, for fortification to see enemies coming. Verse 11, Uzziah had an army equipped for combat. The chronicler set out the general ideas. Now he's specific to the people fighting and their weaponry. So it's not just that he has these places, he has people in these places, and this is the kind of activity they do. Uzziah had an army equipped for combat, went out to war by division according to their assignments, as recorded by Jael, the court secretary, and Messiah, the officer under the authority of Hananiah, one of the king's commanders. Can you be more specific than verse 11? Can you be more specific about the structures of Israel? Verse 12, the total number of the heads of the families, 2,600 brave warriors. Under their authority, 300,000 equipped for battle, a powerful force to help the king against the enemy. Uzziah provided the entire army with shields, spears, helmets, armor, bows, sling stones. He made skillfully designed devices in Jerusalem to shoot arrows and catapult large stones. Part of those towers were for that. Verse 15, notice the conclusion here. His fame spread. God made him successful. God made him successful. God made him successful. His fame spread. Brothers and sisters, do you see how we are building on the last several chapters? We're here in chapter 26. We're just building on the moments in the previous king's lives when they're successful, they heard the word of the Lord, and what happened? And this is where we are. His fame spread even to distant places. He was marvelously helped. Until he became strong. And notice verse 16. When he became strong, he grew arrogant. He was marvelously helped by God until he became strong. Or a way to state the idea, he grew strong until he relied on his strength. He grew strong until he knew it. He grew strong until he understood himself to be the center of his strength. And it's at that point that the Lord's jealousy is evoked, because it's God who made him strong. I am no prophet, but I believe that there are many successful days ahead for you. Kids, you're going to get in the school you want to. You're going to score the winning touchdown. You are going to make the winning basket. You are going to give the winning speech. Some of you looking to have a lifetime partner in marriage, you're going to get the guy of your dreams, the girl of your dreams. You're going to get that. Some of you are going to get the vehicle you want. You're going to drive off the lot, and you might even pay for it with cash. You're going to live in the neighborhood you want to live in. That may be you. And right there is where you will know what your relationship with God is like. You will know if you fear God right there. You will know it when you wreck the car. You'll know it when you don't get the job. You'll know it when they break up with you. When that winning touchdown drops through your hands and you got to go back to the huddle. You'll know your relationship with God there. You'll also know it when you're successful. So I want to give you 7 prayer requests for when you are successful. Here's 7 ideas that when you're successful, you'll be guarded from knowing it. Because success is not a sin, Christian. It's not. It is not a sin to be successful. It is not a sin to be emotionally stable. In our day, if Christian, again, we need each other. We need that sort of atmosphere where life's hard. We need help. That's true. I need it. You need it. But if that's all we think about God, what happens when things do go well? We don't fear him. We don't think about him. We just go on with life. And that's when we set ourselves up for failure. And then we're back in the slog. God will bring that, but we don't need to seek it. Number 1, give specific thanks. Give specific thanks. When I say specific, I mean, God, I thank you that when my boss called me into the office and gave me the raise, he looked me in the eye, she addressed me by name. I thank you that this raise means 12 cents more an hour. Or this raise means I'm out of the cubicle and I get an office. And that office is 18 feet by 14 feet. And I'm thankful for every one of those feet, God. I'm thankful. Be specifically thankful. I thank you that now I get to enter with a key fob. I'm thankful that now I don't have to do this. I get to do that. Be specifically thankful for that blessing. I'm thankful when you're engaged. I'm thankful I don't ever have to date again. Is that not? I've been married almost forever, right? And it's always great. I am just so thankful I don't have to date again. I've been married it's pressing toward 30 years. And I'm still thankful, except my wife, which we date every week, which I can't wait till the next date. I'm so, aren't you thankful when you get the car, at least that you want, that you don't have to go car shopping again? I mean, that'll save you from a lot of pain. I'm thankful. Give specific thanks to God. This is from you. Every square foot of this is from you. Every hour I'm on the clock is from you. I now have retirement as a part of my job. God, I'm thankful for that. I don't experience it yet, but I'm thankful. So that's going to be there for me. Give specific thanks. Second, pray about giving more. Pray about giving more. If you're a guest with us, you hear a preacher talk about giving, I want you to know that if someone were to record all of my sermons and do a word count, my guess is that I've said this kind of an idea maybe three times this year. It's definitely, it's single digits, it's not double. And if you have your bulletin there, you can scan. Last week, in 1 week, we had three times our normal weekly. So I'm not begging for money, I'm not asking for any of those kinds of things. But if we don't ever think about our resources, that's not appropriate either. It's very likely that if you're successful, that success somehow translates to dollars. It's just true in our world. If you get a job, it's an increase. Rarely do we get, I got a new job and it's a pay cut. Well, maybe you might do that. That may be what God would have. I don't know. Maybe something to think about. But probably not. If it's a success, if it's a promotion, I have more. Then pray about giving more. And for some of us, I think 10% is a good round number. Just sacrifice. And for some folks, 10% is not really a sacrifice. If you have dual income, no kids, and both make $70,000 a year, $140,000, are you serious that $14,000 is a sacrifice for two people? I just don't buy that. Now, you got five kids, one income, 10%, a sacrifice every time you write that check, send that electronic transfer. And God knows it. And every time you're more successful, you have an opportunity to remember where that success came from. This is from God. My bank account is about God. Pray about giving more. Third, pray for influence. Pray for influence for God's kingdom. The position that you have, the relationships that you're in, your business card may have a secular brand on it, but if you are a believer, you have the Spirit branding you. You are an ambassador for Christ. With a secular business card. The Spirit is more powerful through you than any company structure you're operating in. The kind of person you are there can have great pervasive influence, even if you're working for a company that doesn't honor God. I'm saying we go look for companies that explicitly dishonor God or do something immoral and expect God's blessing there. No, but we can work in a secular environment, honestly doing our work well unto the Lord, and be successful there. And when you're successful, pray for influence. God, this 18 by 14 office, I recognize it's from you, so use it. use meetings in here. Let me be someone just dripping with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, so that people just see different. Let me respond better. Help me shut my mouth off. Help me at the water cooler. Help me at the job site in this environment. I'm here and I have not worked with these people before, and they're a rough bunch. I can see it. Help me to be honest. Give me influence for you. Fourth, pray God will bless your partners. No success comes alone. Young man, young woman, you score the winning shot in your game. Pray that God would help that to make the team successful. We've all seen the braggadocious all-star who scores, and it's interesting that the team doesn't go up and congratulate them, because it's always all about them. They're good, and they know it. Pray that God would help teammates, your partners, those who are around you. Pray God would help if you've got success coming your way, God, help the people who are helping me make this happen. Help them, Lord. Give them wisdom. Give them integrity. Help them in this opportunity. You make that purchase that you've wanted, pray for the business that's there. Pray for the people who are going to be driving that car with you. Pray God will bless your partners. No success is accomplished alone. If Uzziah was praying for his troops and the priests, he would not have gone into the temple, what we're going to see in a moment. If he was begging of God to bless those who were around him, he would not have done what he did. Number five, pray God will use your success to bless the local church. Brothers and sisters, you are not alone as a Christian. Your failures, we are here for you. Hard days, we are here. Your success, we are here. Pray God would bless the local church as a result of your success. Pray he would strengthen the local church. Pray that he, in giving you influence and resources, would bless your local church, because this family, you are a part of it long after that business relationship, long after that car has its last start. Things of this earth are going to wear out. The structures, Paul said, of this earth are passing away. Live in such a way that you understand that. This is the eternal people of God. We're about to experience that as a church more and more, what it means to be the eternal people of God. This local church. And every pastor could say the same idea. Number six, pray God will bless believers who work for your competitors. Pray God will bless believers who work for your competitors. That will help you to remember that your success is really about God and not your brand. God, I pray that, if there were an executive from Coca-Cola in our church today, I'd say, brother, sister, you need to pray for Christians that you know who work at Pepsi. Pray God would give them integrity in their work. Pray he'd bless their families. Pray he'd give them creativity and good ideas. Because your success at Coke is not about you. You remember that you wake up every day healthy because of God, not that red and white can. Your success is from God. So it's not inconsistent to pray for brothers and sisters, part of the eternal family, who might work for a competitor. Young athlete, you pray for believers on the opposing team and pray God would keep them healthy, give them success, and bring out the best in you for his glory. Pray for competitors who are believers. Finally, Ask God for wisdom and more success. Ask him for wisdom and more. We need to recognize, again, we've just not, I don't think, done as well as a church. We have a therapeutic kind of culture in modern evangelicalism. And I do not mean to dismiss the need for therapy or clinical help when that is needed. I participate in that. I have my friends do. I'm all for this. But that is not, that does not mean God is just a therapist. He's the king of the universe. And sometimes he grants success. And when he grants that, it's not a sin. And we honor him by praying for more success. God, give us more. Give us more influence. If we are just, as a church, if every church is just full of all kinds of problems, do we recognize that it's hard to sometimes get much traction in life and things? There are ups and downs for all of us, and we, brothers, sisters, don't hear me say that those aren't important. We're here for you. You heard it prayed this morning. We need each other, but we need to recognize that when we are given success by God, that is a time to fear him as well. And if we don't think about that, we are tempted not to fear him. We are tempted perhaps to think this is of us and walk away. And look at Uzziah, verse 16. When he became strong, he grew arrogant, and it led to his own destruction. He acted unfaithfully against the Lord his God. Look at what he did. The kind of arrogance that Uzziah has, it's kind of a reflective arrogance. I accomplished this, I accomplished this, I accomplished this. I'm now an entrepreneur. I'm going to branch out. I've been successful as a king. I've done military exploits way to the southeast. I've hit the west. I've fortified. What's left but the temple? Uzziah's arrogance is hard to overstate. He went into the Lord's temple, verse 16, the Lord's sanctuary, to burn incense on the incense altar. Azariah the priest, along with 80 brave priests of the Lord, went in after him. And the after him there is not just chronologically, it's to go and get him. It's that kind of an after. James Thompson writes, Uzziah had always been a strong leader. This had enabled him to do great works. He had not been one of the weak kings of Judah who was easily swayed like others, or too open to accommodating with the leaders in the north. But as is often the case with strong leaders, this virtue gave way to a headstrong, I can do no wrong attitude. Uzziah's pride was expressed in usurping the role of priests. Only the priests were to burn incense. Exodus 30, Numbers 16 and 18. Uzziah took up a task that was not his because he had been so successful at what was his. Verse 18, they took their stand against Uzziah. Uzziah, you've no right to offer the incense to the Lord. Only the consecrated priests, the descendants of Aaron, have the right to offer incense. Leave the sanctuary. Flee for your life is the language. You've acted unfaithfully. You will not receive honor from the Lord God. And the chronicler is explicit. Before this, Uzziah did have honor. And the Lord provided a direct retribution. Uzziah, with a censer in his hand to offer incense, was enraged. He wouldn't listen, but when he became enraged with the priests, in the presence of the priests in the Lord's temple beside the altar of incense, notice what only the Lord could do. Immediately, a skin disease. It's exactly tit for tat. You come into a place that's consecrated and holy, I'm going to make you holy, and I'm going to make sure everyone sees it. A skin disease disqualified someone from entering the temple, a priest especially. And here's the king acting as a priest, and notice where this skin disease is. It's where everyone can see it. Uzziah, if you don't make me the billboard of your success, I'm going to make you a billboard of failure. Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests turned to him and saw it was diseased on his forehead. They rushed him out. They're saving his life. King Uzziah was diseased to the time of his death. He lived in a quarantine. We know so much about that. We chuckle, but he lived there forever. It wasn't 2 weeks. It wasn't 10 days if you've got it, 14 if you've been exposed. That's the rest of his life. And notice, that quarantine includes an exclusion, excluded from access to the Lord's temple. Even when he was buried, he wasn't buried in the tombs of the kings, but just in their grounds away from them. And here's the last phrase for Uzziah, verse 23. He has a skin disease. Not even buried with them. If we are successful and do not fear God, we are setting ourselves up for similar failure and similar reaction from the Lord. He will have no rivals. And if we don't honor him in success, we can look forward to retribution. Now, that retribution is a bit different, though. Notice, Uzziah was away from the presence of the Lord. Brothers and sisters, if we don't honor God when we get the raise, when we get the girl, when we get the guy, when we catch the pass, make the shot, get the office, get the neighborhood, get the vehicle, whatever it is. If we don't honor God, there very well could be consequences. I've known this in people. I've known people who bought a car they knew they shouldn't have had and spent money on something they couldn't afford to impress people they didn't like with money they didn't have. And they did this, and that car was wrecked. And they knew it right then. They knew it. This is the Lord's justice to me. Have a relationship that you're in and you know it's not right, and that person dumps you in that very moment. You know this is from you, Lord. You know it in your deepest being. This was because I'm wrong. Uzziah was away from the presence of the Lord the rest of his life. And I want to be very clear, brothers and sisters, if you're in Jesus Christ and you're successful in all the terms I've set out today, or in one of those, perhaps many of them, and you don't fear God, you can guarantee there's going to be retribution from the Lord. His wrath is going to be incited. But one thing is for certain. If you are in Christ, you will not be banished from his presence. This is the fulcrum I mentioned earlier that distinguishes Uzziah's experience and ours. Uzziah was banished from the Lord's presence. That will never be the result of God's wrath with you. Will God be wrathful? Yes, to an extent. Will he bring justice into your life, retribution? Yes. Sometimes, in hindsight, comically so. In all his gentle, forceful sovereignty, comically you'll recognize. Say, thank you, Lord. You took the car, you took the girl, whatever. You did this, Lord. This was you. But you will never be banished from his presence. This distinguishes Uzziah from every believer. This is where, hear it well, Christian, grace and consequence are not at odds. And you need to hear that in modern evangelicalism, where there's so much, not an appropriate emphasis on grace, but not a holistic understanding of it, that God brings consequences into our lives. Doesn't mean we don't have access to him. But those consequences are the result of our sin. But there, you know this and I do too. You know right there in the midst of that discipline from the Lord, you know that you can go to him and you have access to him right there in the sweetest way. God, I can even thank you for the consequences. I can even thank you for the justice you've brought upon me. I can thank you for taking the car, taking the girl, letting me drop the ball. Because you have me. Because I have you. And now I appreciate that the more. I have what I really need. You're the center of my success. My life really is about you.